Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 109, Kitchen Questions, Volume 3. Hey everybody, thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the show. I'm Roger, your host, and this is the podcast that's all about home cooking and helping you get into the kitchen, have more fun, learn more things, and, just have an all-around good time cooking for your family and friends. So thank you so much for joining me today. We're going to have a good episode here. You know, every once in a while, when I get emails from listeners, oftentimes it's just to say hi, say thanks, have some suggestions for upcoming topics. And then other times, folks will send me in a question, and then I generally correspond with them on email. And so I've got kind of a pool of these questions that I've gone over in the past with folks, and I thought I'd pull a few out, and we'll do an episode today on some of the questions that have come in. So today will be a Q&A style episode. Before we get into that, a couple of quick things. You can always send me an email if you want to ask a question or just say hi, over to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. And of course, you can find my Facebook page over at facebook.com/kitchencounterpodcast, or you can find me on Twitter at @TKCpodcast. Always excited to hear from you and at least meet you virtually. So feel free, again, to send over an email anytime you want to chat. I also want to mention, I think I had my other episode recorded before this particular guest spot had been released, but I was a guest on Seth Heasley's podcast, and you might know Seth from episode 84 way back when on this show when we did Chili Cast. Seth Heasley came on and we talked about chili. Well, just this month, February, I should say, Seth had me on his new podcast, the Hugo's There podcast, to talk about Ray Bradbury's Fahrenheit 451. Now, not cooking related, but I am a big Ray Bradbury fan, so I had a lot of fun heading over to Seth's show to talk about that. The name of the show, Hugo's There, is a clever play on the Hugo Award name, because Seth is taking all the Hugo science fiction and fantasy award winners, reading them, and then doing an episode on each one as he goes. And he asked if I'd like to do the Ray Bradbury Fahrenheit 451 episode. And of course, I was super excited to do that. Again, not cooking related, but if you're a science fiction kind of a person, you can hear me over there. I will put a link to that episode in my show notes, kitchencounterpodcast.com/109. So Seth, thanks so much for having me on. It was a lot of fun. I encourage you to go check out that conversation. All right, it's time. Let's dive in. I grabbed, five or six questions here pulled out. We're going to talk about them. Let's jump into Kitchen Questions, Volume 3. Okay, some of these questions are newer, some are a little bit older. I'm going to grab these in no particular order. I just kind of copied and pasted them into Evernote, so I'm just going to take them as I did that. So the first question comes from Amanda. And Amanda asked me to talk a little bit more about cooking oil. So her question is, can you talk about cooking oils? My husband insists on using extra virgin olive oil for everything. It seems a little bit expensive to do that when vegetable oil could be used instead in many cases. Also, what exactly is a neutral oil, and is extra virgin olive oil considered a neutral oil? Okay, great questions. I don't think I've really ever talked about cooking oils in depth on the show, so let's go over this briefly. I think it's good to know the difference between a neutral oil and I guess an oil you would not consider neutral. And there's a couple of different parameters, I think, when you're thinking about using cooking oil. One is, are you looking for an oil that has a very pronounced and distinct flavor? Or are you looking for an oil that is not going to lend a lot of flavor to whatever it is you're cooking? So, for example, sesame oil is a very flavorful oil, and you wouldn't use sesame oil in a recipe where you didn't really want to have that sesame flavor come through. You would probably want to use a more neutral oil, which would be something like, let's say, a canola oil, which practically has no flavor. So that's one parameter, is what kind of flavor are you looking for in the dish? And then the other parameter when you're looking at cooking oils is how hot and what type of cooking it is you're going to be doing. So some oils do a lot better, say, deep frying as opposed to making a vinaigrette for a salad, for example. So my rule of thumb when it comes to cooking oil is if you want a flavorless or an oil that doesn't have a very distinct flavor, I would call that a neutral oil. And examples of neutral oils are canola oils, vegetable oils, light olive oils are good neutral oils, grapeseed oils. Those are examples of what I would call neutral oils. Now, neutral oils also typically have a higher smoke point, which means you can cook them to a higher temperature before they start smoking. So for higher temperature applications like deep frying or high temperature sauteing, definitely things like the vegetable oil, the light olive oil, grapeseed oil are better than things like extra virgin olive oil, which I would not consider a neutral oil. So, you know, if you just take a little bit of bread and dip it in olive oil and taste it, you know, it has a very distinct, and some might even say a very strong flavor, kind of a fruity, in some ways almost floral flavor and taste. Definitely not neutral. And extra virgin olive oil has a relatively low smoke point, which means it will start smoking at higher temperatures a lot quicker than, say, just even a vegetable oil or a light olive oil. And part of the reason different oils have different smoke points is how it depends on how refined they are. So let's just take the olive oil example. So if you have an extra virgin olive oil, most of the time that means that it's the oil that's taken from the first cold pressing of the olives. It's not refined in any way. So you're going to have a lot more non-oil materials in that olive oil, a lot more solids. That's what gives it its flavor, its color, as opposed to an extra light olive oil, which has probably been refined to remove those other solids and materials. And when you heat oil to a high temperature, it's those other materials in the oil which really start smoking at a lower temperature. So the more refined your oil is, the less likely it is to impart extra flavor to your dish, and the less likely it is to smoke when it gets to higher temperatures. I'm kind of rambling on here about oils, but hopefully that makes a little more sense. So can you use extra virgin olive oil for everything? You can use it for a lot of things, but you know, I definitely wouldn't recommend like deep frying an extra virgin olive oil. Not only would that be very expensive, but it's just not an ideal oil for that kind of a high temperature application. Or let's say you're making Asian cuisine. You know, extra virgin olive oil is going to taste out of place in a stir-fry vegetable dish, for example, I think. So I would choose something more neutral, like just a vegetable or a canola oil, and you're going to have a lot less distinctive olive oil flavor in your stir fry, just to name one example. So to recap, neutral oils are usually more refined. They don't impart strong flavor, and they have a higher smoke point as opposed to other oils like extra virgin olive oil or sesame oil or even avocado oil, which are going to be a little more flavorful and have a lower smoke point. Okay. Thanks, Amanda. That was a great question. All right. Here's one that came up just based on my most recent episode, my five tips for fantastic fish episode. This is from Martin, and this was Martin's question. You talked about cooking white fish in your latest episode, but what about salmon? Can you use the same techniques you talked about in that episode to cook salmon? So if you haven't listened to my five tips for fantastic fish episode, I really honed in on like thin white fish fillets and how to cook those. And I talked specifically about two very simple cooking methods. One was just using a broiler, you know, broiler pan, salt and pepper the fish, brush it with a little olive oil, and put the pan under the broiler to simulate almost a grilling of the fish. And then the other method I talked about was the stovetop method, which was using a nonstick skillet over medium-high heat, coating the skillet with olive oil. And in this technique, I talked about salt and peppering your white fish fillets, dredging them through flour, and then cooking them in the skillet. So Martin wants to know if you can do salmon both of those ways. And the short answer is kind of yes, but you have to tweak a couple of different things. So I talked also last episode about the 10-minute rule for fish as a baseline to kind of understand how long you're going to need to cook your fish. So to recap that, you take your fish fillet and you measure it at your thickest point or its thickest point. And then you say it's 10 minutes per inch using high heat. So if you have a 1-inch thick salmon fillet, at its thickest point, you can say, if I'm going to, you know, cook that in a high heat skillet, it's going to take 10 minutes. And that's a rough rule of thumb. If it's less than an inch, it's going to take less than 10 minutes. You just kind of got to do the math. And that's still a good rule of thumb to use for salmon. But salmon is a fattier fish, and typically you're going to treat salmon a little bit differently than you will with whitefish, particularly in the sorts of flavorings you're going to use. So for example, salmon really takes sweetness well. So you'll see a lot of salmon recipes that call for things like a maple glaze or a honey soy glaze. I've even seen salmon recipes that call for brown sugar. So those are great, but just understand that when you're doing something like that under a broiler, that sugar and sweet, you know, sauces and marinades and things like that will tend to burn much more easily under the direct heat of a broiler. So you just have to be careful. Also, if your salmon fillet is really thick, you have to be careful under the broiler because you run the risk of cooking the exterior of the fish really fast and leaving the interior underdone. So in the case of a thick salmon fillet under a broiler, you might need to flip it halfway through just to make sure you're getting an even cook. Now, the stovetop method is a lot more forgiving with salmon. The only difference I would recommend is I would use a combination of olive oil and butter to coat the pan, and I would not dredge the salmon through the flour. That's not really a technique that works well for salmon. So skip the flour, salt and pepper your salmon, and get your skillet nice high heat, and again, using the 10-minute rule, flip it about halfway through the cooking time, and you should be good to go. Okay, next question is from Connor, and Connor wanted to know, now this isn't necessarily a cooking-related question personally, but he wanted to know if I watched any food or cooking-related TV shows, and if so, which ones? And this is actually, maybe this has changed a little bit since Connor and I were emailing back and forth, but I don't really watch a lot of food-related TV. I would say 4 or 5 years ago, I watched a fair amount of the Food Network and the Cooking Channel. And I think Bravo TV that had the Top Chef series on? I really, really like Top Chef. But I haven't really watched a lot of food-related TV lately. And I think part of it's just time. I just don't have a lot of time. And I think another part of it is I think there's a lot of great food TV on right now. I do like to watch Chopped occasionally, although again, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I probably watched it a lot more. I don't find it all that interesting anymore. I know they're trying to switch it up, but it's not so bad. Recently, based on a listener recommendation, I am checking out the 5-part miniseries on Netflix, Cooked. It's a Michael Pollan production, and it's pretty good. I mean, I have some issues with Michael Pollan and some of the things he talks about and the way he approaches food, but overall, I think it's an excellent documentary, and it's entertaining. Again, there are some parts that make me not want to finish watching the episode that I'm on, but I'm thinking about actually doing an episode or maybe a couple episodes in the future on Cooked. But that's just kind of a quick summary of what kind of food shows I'm watching. Oh, I will say when Halloween comes around, my wife and I love to watch I think it's on Cooking or maybe it's on the Food Network, the holiday challenges, you know, where they have to make crazy cakes for, you know, Halloween scenes and that sort of stuff. So we do watch those when they're on. Okay, Joan had a question about air fryers, and she wants me to do a review or want to know if I've done a review for air fryers. And she says she knows some people who swear by them, but she's also watched some YouTube reviews that weren't so great. And I don't have an air fryer, and I've never really used an air fryer. I know a couple of folks that have one, but honestly, I haven't talked to them a whole heck of a lot about air frying. If you're not familiar with what an air fryer is, essentially it's a tabletop appliance that has a little cooking basket in it. And you put food in this basket that you want to fry, like maybe a couple of pieces of fried chicken or some potatoes or whatever the case may be. It's kind of like a miniature convection oven, as I understand it. It's got a high-speed fan and high temperature. So the fan circulates a very high temperature around and through the food that you're trying to fry. And it kind of simulates a deep-fried texture without actually immersing your food into hot oil. And so that's what an air fryer is. Again, I've not used one, but I'm curious if any of you listening to the show have used an air fryer or have an air fryer and have strong opinions on it one way or the other. Why don't you do this? Send me an email over to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com because I'd love to collect some of that. And, you know, maybe we can structure an episode around this somehow, but I'd love to find Joan some real world feedback on air fryers. I just did some quick Google searching and, you know, it's kind of frustrating when you go to look up appliances or products online because 9 times out of 10, all you can find are obviously, you know, shoddily written pieces about air fryers and then with a bunch of Amazon links. And it's like, oh, well, they probably don't even have an air fryer. They're just writing whatever they can find on the internet about air fryers and you don't get a good, honest review. So if any of you folks have opinions on air fryers, please send me an email and let me know. I'd love to get that back to Joan. Okay. Okay. Next question. So this question comes from a new listener, Emily. Emily wrote me an email. This is actually a very recent one, just about a week ago or maybe 2 weeks ago. So Emily says she has a question about cooking ground beef and onions. In the Brown Food Tastes Better episode, I didn't look up what episode number that was, but that's an episode I had done quite a while back. But in the Brown Food Tastes Better episode, you talked about caramelizing onions for flavor and then hitting ground beef with high heat to properly brown it. When making dishes that contain onions and ground beef, I don't know which order to cook them. What order do you suggest cooking ground beef and onions for maximum flavor? Emily goes on to say that she makes homemade bolognese sauce. So first of all, thumbs up to you, Emily. That's awesome. And I usually start caramelizing onions and then add in the ground beef. Is that the correct order to add them? Should I increase the heat when I add the ground beef? I worry that I will burn the onions. Should I take the onions out while I brown the beef? Well, let's talk about this a little bit because I think this is an interesting question. And just for the sake of clarity, I think we should go over a couple of definitions. So typically when you caramelize something like onions, for example, that's a pretty long cooking method that requires you to basically get the moisture out of the onions and cook them so that natural sugars in those onions start to caramelize and become sweet. If you do a kind of a traditional caramelizing onions process, I mean, that can take 30, 40 minutes. It's a very slow process. On the other hand, if you're just dicing up some onions because you want to include them into a ground beef recipe, you're not going to be caramelizing those onions. You're actually probably just going to be sweating those onions. And sweating onions basically just means you cook them, over medium heat, until the onions sort of become translucent and soft, and you're kind of pulling some of the flavor out of the onions, and that is kind of what's going to be contributing to the rest of the flavor in your ground beef dish. And then, this isn't really a topic of the question, but I guess the third definition we should talk about, and I might have covered it in that show, is sautéing. And that's different from caramelizing and sweating, because sautéing, if you're going to sauté onions, it's getting your skillet really hot and cooking your onions for a relatively short period of time. So you don't want the onions to get soft and you don't want them to kind of lose their flavor. You want them to stay sort of crispy and crunchy and still taste oniony. So that's kind of sautéing. But when you're doing a ground beef dish and you want to add onions in, what I told Emily over email is, believe it or not, whether you do the onions first and then add ground beef or whether you do the ground beef first and then add onions, 99% of the time, you're not going to taste a difference. I do it both ways, mainly because I'm completely inconsistent when I do things like that. But oftentimes what I'll do is I'll just brown the ground beef. I will drain the ground beef and then I will, toss in my, diced onions into the same pan. There'll be enough fat left over from the beef that you don't need to add any oil and kind of cook the onions and sweat out the onions in with the beef. And it turns out just fine. So as I told Emily, I think the lame short answer is it doesn't really matter what order you do it in as long as it's convenient for you. What I think is important, though, regardless of which order you do it in, is that you get the onions soft. So when you're sweating the onions, you get them soft and translucent because typically you don't want crunchy onion-flavored bits in your ground beef mixture. So by sweating them, they're going to impart their flavor into the whole dish, and they're not going to remain crunchy and kind of, ugh, you know, like onions can be when you're not expecting crunchy onions in your food. All right, Emily, thank you very much for that question. So I'm about out of time today, so I'm going to wrap it up with those questions for now. Now, I have a whole bucket of questions left that I'm going to try to either do a couple more of these kitchen questions type of episodes, or I'll pepper them into some other episodes, or maybe even build deeper topics around the questions. But just to give you a heads up also on a couple of other things in the works, I do owe you a hot sauce recipe, and I'm working on that as we speak. So Mark, I know we email back and forth about that. That's on the way. And in a couple of weeks, I'm going to have one of the top bloggers for sourdough bread on the show, and we're going to talk about how to get started making sourdough bread at home. This has been an episode a long time in the making. I'm really excited about that, so keep your eyes open for that in a couple of weeks. Also, soon I will have another smorgasbord episode with a mishmash of topics and another cookbook giveaway. But I'm out of time for today, so I just want to say thank you very much for listening. I really, really appreciate it. I know I'm getting a lot of new listeners through Apple Podcasts, and I want to say welcome and thanks to each and every one of you. Once again, if you'd like to send me an email, you could do so, feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. All right, folks, this is Roger with the Kitchen Counter Podcast, and until next time, happy cooking.